This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's important to remember that these actions have deadly consequences. We just released an analysis that showed that the Trump executive order that called for a 90-day hold on PEPFAR programming, if that were to move forward in its original form, it would have led to 100,000 deaths.
That was Gerard Radvotsian, a former head of staff at PEPFAR, the American HIV program, on the impact of shutting down the program that saved millions of lives. Details coming up. Also, we'll look at the impact of moves to cut waste and reduce the size of the U.S. government workforce. And Muslims around the world are preparing for Ramadan. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United States government has terminated thousands of foreign aid grants and awards worldwide. Many nonprofit organizations that had distributed U.S.-funded medicines and prevented infectious diseases in Africa are now permanently shut down. Darren Taylor reports.
Contractors in South Africa received an email Wednesday from Washington saying that continuation of their programs was not in the United States' national interest. These include many projects that recently received waivers to allow them to continue providing life-saving services after U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a 90-day pause in aid programs to allow time to review them. The U.S. State Department said ending the grants from the U.S. Agency for International Development would save billions of taxpayer dollars to be used to make the U.S. stronger, safer, and more prosperous. U.S. aid officials who spoke on condition of anonymity told VOA the administration's decision would cost thousands of lives through hunger and infectious diseases. Gerard Radvotsian, now an infectious diseases fellow at Duke University in the U.S., is former head of staff at PEPFAR, the U.S. HIV program that saved millions of lives and prevented millions of infections in Africa over the past 25 years. He says the decision to cancel U.S. aid grants effectively destroys PEPFAR.
It's important to remember that these actions have deadly consequences. We just released an analysis that showed that the Trump executive order that called for a 90-day hold on PEPFAR programming, if that were to move forward in its original form, it would have led to 100,000 deaths.
Now, says Radvotsian, with the U.S. government deciding to permanently close U.S. aid and PEPFAR projects, deaths will be far higher. African medical scientist Linda Gale Becker told VOA that PEPFAR-funded nonprofits were filling crucial gaps in HIV healthcare delivery across the continent.
The PEPFAR dollars were being concentrated in finding the people who aren't in our programs, who have disengaged from care, the people who find it difficult to come to our health facilities that are mainstreamed. You do want to reach everybody who might be living with HIV who may not know that they are. We need to go the extra mile. We have to go outside of our health facilities, into communities. We need to look for them because they aren't actually in our services. And these are all the very critical responses that the PEPFAR program was bringing to bear. In addition, they were helping with collecting that data so we could really have a good handle on where the epidemic was on the rise or on a decrease. And of course, they were providing a lot of the technical support to the health system in order to make sure that this was happening. So this is what I see.
Becker says the speed at which the U.S. has cut aid means it's almost impossible for governments to provide these services as they won't be able to find other funding in the near term. Radvotsian says Africa and the world must learn from this.
We've all become a little too comfortable, those of us who have been in the HIV response. I think we've become too comfortable with the kinds of partnerships that we have, the kinds of programs that we've designed, the messaging that we've had for these programs. We've become too comfortable to rely on the budgets that has been given to HIV programming from donors. We thought that we were untouchable. And I think one lesson that I've learned personally and that I hope all of us are learning is that those days are gone.
As things stand, says Becker, Africa may experience a resurgence of HIV and a return to the days when many people died of AIDS because of lack of treatment and prevention. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
During the first cabinet meeting of his second term on Wednesday, President Donald Trump defended his administration's move to cut waste and reduce the size of the U.S. government workforce. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on the impact of those actions and pushback from fired federal workers and Democratic leaders.
Flanked by his new cabinet members, President Donald Trump defended his administration's major cuts in government spending, saying he has a mandate from voters.
I got elected based on taxes and based on many things in the border, but also based on balancing budgets and getting our country back into shape, and this is a big part of it.
Trump praised Elon Musk's swift efforts to reduce government fraud and waste. At Wednesday's cabinet meeting, the tech billionaire told reporters that his Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, needs to move quickly to achieve a $1 trillion deficit reduction by fiscal year 2026.
So it requires saving $4 billion per day, every day, from now through the end of September. We'll make mistakes. We won't be perfect, but when we make mistakes, we'll fix it very quickly.
Union leaders and Democrats in Congress oppose shutting down entire government agencies and the administration's goal to slash the federal workforce of about 2.4 million civilian employees. Democratic minority leader in the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer.
You don't use a blowtorch. You don't use a meat axe and cut all the good things as well as things that are waste, fraud, and abuse. No smart businessman would do that. And I think what they're doing is just outrageous. It's hurting people.
Several probationary federal employees who were recently fired shared their stories on a Zoom webcast organized by Democratic Representative Ro Khanna. Lawyer Michael Grognard, who twice voted for Trump, was fired from the Department of Agriculture.
My role was making sure programs were operated legally, and that seems to comport far more with the increasing government efficiency and decreasing government waste. I'm married. We have a 2-year-old little girl, and we're expecting our son in April, in about 2 months. We were insured through my work.
Scientists have taken to the streets in recent days to protest cuts to medical research and layoffs. Political scientist Jonathan Hansen weighed in on the impact of DOGE measures. He spoke via Skype.
The efforts to date seem to be dramatic moves that are unlikely to have major cost savings in the short term and will be harmful to government capacity in the long run.
So far, the cuts don't seem to have hurt Trump politically. Political scientist Kyle Kondik told VOA via Skype.
I don't think that the reaction has been overwhelmingly negative, because I think if it was, Donald Trump's approval rating would already be, you know, lower than it actually is right now. And I think the idea of spending cuts in the abstract are actually fairly popular.
He added, the question will be how Americans react over the course of several months to potential disruptions of government services they are used to benefiting from. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
At this hour, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky will be at the White House meeting with President Donald Trump. Among other things, the two leaders aim to finalize the economic agreement with the U.S. aimed at financing the reconstruction of war-damaged Ukraine. The agreement, President Trump said earlier this week, involves sales of Ukrainian rare earth minerals, which are crucial to much technology.
And we're going to be signing an agreement, which will be a very big agreement. And I want to thank Howard and Scott for the job you guys did in putting it together. Really did an amazing job. And that'll be on rare earth and other things.
During his trip to Washington, Zelensky also is expected to discuss security guarantees for his country if there is a ceasefire agreement with Russia, which invaded Ukraine 3 years ago.
First of all, I have questions And we very need answers, very honest answers, because we are in a war and we have to understand on what we can count. Yeah, and that's why this visit before Putin is very good signal, first of all. I think so. I don't know how it will be.
Yesterday, Trump hosted British Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the White House, where the two laid out their visions for the end of Ukraine's brutal war. The staunch allies also sparred over trade and tariffs, and Trump revived his first-term push for NATO allies to contribute more to their own security and rely less on American support. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
President Donald Trump hosted British Prime Minister Keir Starmer Thursday at the White House, where the two laid out their visions for the end of Ukraine's brutal three-year war. The staunch allies also sparred over trade and tariffs, and Trump revived his first-term push for NATO allies to contribute more to their own security and rely less on American support. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, the leaders of two nations that formed a special relationship while pushing Nazis and fascists off the battlefields of World War II, met Thursday at the White House to discuss the looming threat, 8 decades later, of war in Europe as Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine enters a fourth year. Trump emphasized his condition for supporting Ukraine. On Friday, he said he will host Ukraine's president to lay out a preliminary deal that gives the U.S. a share of the nation's critical raw materials.
The American taxpayers will now effectively be reimbursed for the money and hundreds of billions of dollars poured into helping Ukraine defend itself, which by and of itself is a very worthy thing to do.
Starmer said the pair discussed a plan for peace that is tough but fair and backed by strength to deter future Russian aggression. He also said he was ready to put boots on the ground and planes in the air to support a deal. And in answer to Trump's demand that NATO members boost defense spending to 5% of GDP, Starmer said he agreed Europe had to step up. Earlier in the week, he announced an unexpected increase that still falls far short of Trump's benchmark. He also set his conditions for a fair settlement.
It can't be peace that rewards the aggressor or that gives encouragement to regimes like Iran. We agree history must be on the side of the peacemaker, not the invader. So the stakes, they couldn't be higher. And we're determined to work together to deliver a good deal.
Unity is key, analysts say, but there will be challenges. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
The most important thing, do these guys get along? Do they have a common vision? Can they maintain some sense of common purpose? Can they avoid the kind of divisive rhetoric that President Trump used a lot last week when he was so pejorative towards President Zelensky of Ukraine? And can we begin to see a Western strategy really emerging that all major countries in NATO can agree to?
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin, who spent his day at the Kremlin hosting a high-ranking North Korean delegation, rejects the idea of peacekeepers in Ukraine. South Korea's spy agency reported Thursday that Pyongyang appears to have sent additional troops to assist Russia on Ukraine's battlefields. Putin said Thursday that there is a mutual readiness for Moscow and Washington to further cooperate after Trump recently reached out directly. He also blamed Western elites for trying to disrupt the blossoming relationship. Trump has said they will meet in Saudi Arabia, but has set no date. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. As people prepare for Ramadan, will observances be the same as in previous years in Goma, the battered city in the eastern DRC? To find out about the overall situation, I reached out to reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma.
I am in the city of Goma, the capital city of the North Kivu province, where the situation is still the same since M23 rebellion took the control of the city. And the city have now a big criminality. When taking the control of the city, the prison of Goma were destroyed and all criminals who were inside evacuated, escaped, and now they are in the city of Goma starting doing their criminality. And as you know, M23 are so busy with continue fighting in the front line, they are not securing the city of Goma as well. We also facing here in the city another problem, which is the lack of cash. The city of Goma doesn't have any operating bank because all banks are closed, and the citizen of Goma living without cash. So many people have their money in banks, but they don't have access on it. And as you know, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow will be the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan for Muslims. And Goma, as all cities in the Eastern DRC, has big quantity, a big number of Muslims.
So, Jafar, you're saying the M23 who control the city are actually out there fighting in other fronts, so there is no security by M23 in the city. And you're saying there is no cash. How is day-to-day life for people who are actually going to celebrate Ramadan and for everyday people who live from day to day without cash and with no security?
That's what I told you. The situation is so hard for local people here, and this is not for a kind of population, but it's for everybody. Even those who can get money, they don't have cash because money in banks, and banks are not operating. So Goma is a city with lack of everything. Goma is a city with needs and needs of everything. Because to buy food, you need money. To buy medicine, you need money. For everything, you need money. And we don't have access to money. And about the security, it's not like M23 doesn't have troops in the city of Goma. But I don't think troops are enough to secure meter by meter of the city of Goma.
So, Jafar, observances of Ramadan will not be the same as in previous years. And you are saying there are concerns about cash shortages and food shortages. How about safety at the mosques and iftar gatherings?
The appointed mayor of the city of Goma by M23 was today at the central mosque of Goma, saying to Muslims that no one forbid them to do their night prayer, but they will need to be careful to end prayer early. Here in Goma, the night prayer during Ramadan used to start at 8 p.m. and to end at 10 p.m., but this year it will start every day at 7:30 and end at 8 p.m.
And lastly, Jafar, you as a practicing Muslim, how have you adjusted, you and your family in Goma for Ramadan?
Really now, I don't know what my family will breakfast with it tomorrow. Not because I don't have money, but because I don't have access to my money. So we will manage to do so, because for Muslim as we are, we believe that God is the one who is in control of everything. And this situation is still controlled by God. And inshallah, God will do the best for us.
Reporter Jafar Al-Khatanti, he spoke to me from Goma. For more than 50 years, WHUR has been broadcasting to the nation's capital from Howard University, a historically black institution. A commercial station owned by university, it offers music, news, and educational opportunities. During Black History Month, VOA's Christina Cassidy-Smith met the team behind the unique station.
It's 96.3 WHUR. Happy Monday! D.C., Baylor, Virginia, listen, I am making plans for you for this. You know, I'm already talking about the summertime.
Since 1971, WHUR 96.3 FM has broadcast to listeners across the Washington region. It was founded with a dual purpose: showcase jazz and advance the role of black Americans. Located at the heart of Howard University, a historically black university, it was described as a new and different venture in radio broadcasting that combines entertainment with education. For midday host, known as Sunny and the City, the station's history and mix of content is a big draw.
This is such a great part about being here at WHUR 96.3. We're a timeless radio station, right? So we do play a lot of current R&B, somewhat hip hop here and there, but it's just such a good listening experience for if you're at work.
Good, how are you?
As a former refugee from Bosnia, Sunny and the city asked us to use only her show name. She moved to the United States and learned English when she was 12. She fell in love with radio after leaving high school.
It just felt so alive, and I just was so in awe of how what it takes to do a radio show and to do these things. I was like, oh my God, I have to be here.
This station also serves as a learning ground. Part of its function is to offer internships to students majoring in radio broadcasting at Howard.
So they kind of rotate through semesters and they come and they learn. There's many different departments here. So.
One of the few commercial radio stations owned and run by a college or university, the station broadcasts to residents in the nation's capital. Serving the community is WHUR's focus, and music is a big part of what the station offers its listeners.
Go-go music, other things. We have local DJs that are able to, do their mix shows on the weekends. And so again, we have been very unique. We sound like Washington.
News is another focus, with the station covering current events and analysis with shows like The Daily Drum and Sunny and the City segment, White House Wednesday.
Where I have a really great correspondent from the White House that she checks in and we talk. Her name is Ebony McMorris. We talk about all the political things and there's endless things to talk about, especially now.
Since its inception, the Howard University radio station has served as a source of news, music, and through its internships, opportunity, covering issues and Black history and culture for its audiences. Cristina Caicedo-Smith, VOA News.
Howard University, WHUR, has a special place for me because it's there that I honed my radio skills and hosted a radio program titled African Panorama for a number of years. So, now our sports roundup. I have VOA sports analyst Mokbilia Baro in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So the NBA is heating up. What are the games to watch over the weekend?
Absolutely. If we're just going to go into it, the game to watch tonight for sure has to be the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Boston Celtics, the number one team and the number two team in the Eastern Conference. The Cavaliers are the hottest team in the NBA still. I feel like we've been talking about this the entire season. 48 wins and 10 losses, and the Celtics have 42 wins and 17 losses. Now, with that being said, it's going to be very, very difficult for the Celtics to get this done because the Cavaliers have been clicking on all cylinders. And one more game to highlight, I definitely would say, is the Knicks versus the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are number two in the West, and the Knicks are currently sitting in the third spot right after the Celtics.
And Mokbil, the English Premier League had midweek matches. Any highlights?
Absolutely. I would say Liverpool versus Newcastle. Liverpool are atop of the Premier League, and currently with the standings that they have, they are soaring, and if everything stays as is, seems like they should be able to finish off the season with Mohamed Salah really in that Ballon d'Or conversation. He has been phenomenal for them. 2-0 win against Newcastle really made light of a team that has given the number two team, Arsenal, some trouble this season multiple times. Chelsea were able to kind of get their groove back a little bit, if you will. 4-0 win against Southampton, but also Southampton is going to be relegated, so it wasn't too big of a win. But lastly, Manchester United versus Ipswich Town, they were able to find a way to win 3-2 against Ipswich.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer and sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.